Welcome to Not So Different, a podcast from the Center for Biosimilars. I'm your host, Senior Editor Kelly Davio. The question of whether anti-cancer biosimilars will achieve strong uptake in the United States, and whether they will produce much-needed cost savings, is one that has pervaded the conversation about U.S. biosimilars for some time. Shortly after Amgen launched the first two such agents, biosimilar trastuzumab and bevacizumab, OneOncology, a group that comprises four large community oncology practices and 100 sites of care, announced that it had made those two biosimilars preferred agents. This week on the podcast, we're speaking with Dr. Jeffrey Patton. He's the chief executive officer of Tennessee Oncology, a partner practice of OneOncology, as well as the president of physician services for OneOncology. Dr. Patton shares with us the rationale for adoption of biosimilars, how patients are responding, and lessons learned. Dr. Patton, thank you for joining us for this episode of Not So Different.
I'm happy to be here. Thanks for thinking of me.
So first things first, can you give us a bit of background about Tennessee Oncology and about OneOncology?
Tennessee Oncology has been in existence since 1976. We've grown to right at 100 physicians and 50 advanced providers. We provide services in 32 sites across both Middle and Eastern Tennessee. We have about 1,000 employees. So we provide a lot of service in our service area. We approached two other sister practices, the West Clinic in Memphis and New York Blood and Cancer in New York, Long Island, and Manhattan, about forming being the anchor practices to form a like-minded network of community oncologists across the country, and those were the founding practices. Our goal was to start a organization that was physician-led, physician-owned, that would allow practices to maintain their local independence, but to come together as a national network. So we feel like it's the best of both worlds. The practices are sort of able to maintain their practice locally, make all their clinical decisions, and provide care to their patients as they, and hopefully by aggregating our practices together and sharing best practices, what we call the shared intelligence. So we feel really good about bringing the best minds together to share best practices and improve care to patients in the communities where they live.
So OneOncology is among the first to adopt anti-cancer biosimilars, and you recently announced that your partner practices have begun treating patients with biosimilar bevacizumab and trastuzumab. Why did you decide to become an early adopter of these agents?
So it's not what will be news to you or the audience that one of the hottest topics in oncology is the expense of the medicines that we use. And those expenses are out of our control. They're set by the manufacturers, but we're cognizant that if spending continues to increase, there could be limits to therapy for patients, and that's the last thing we want. We always want access to absolutely the best therapy for our patients, and we don't want to spend the system into bankruptcy. So when we saw the biosimilars were coming, we knew that we were going to adopt them predominantly because of the 15% cost savings, which will likely increase over time. And so it both saves the system money, it saves patients money if they have coinsurance or copay, and so everybody wins. Now, let me say that we certainly spent a lot of time on the science beforehand. Dr. Lee Schwartzberg is the chief medical officer for OneOncology. Dr. Natalie Dixon is the chief medical officer for Tennessee Oncology. And we had a subcommittee that really looked hard at the science of biosimilars. And we're convinced that they're every bit as good and as effective, have the same toxicity profile as the originator products. And so if we can give products to our patients that are just as good as the originator, but are a cost savings to the system and a cost savings to our patients, it's kind of a why not.
Did you face any challenges when you were making biosimilars your preferred formulary agents? And if you did, how did you overcome those?
So we have not, electronic medical records are much maligned and often appropriately so, but in ordering and making formulary changes, they actually are very helpful. And so we were able to list the biosimilar agents in the various regimens that they are used as our preferred agent. And so it's very easy for our physicians to say, okay, this is the preferred, this is what I should do. They certainly, if they have some reason to believe that, you know, the biosimilar is not appropriate for their patient, they certainly have the option to use the originator, and certainly patients that are already on one of the originator products, we encourage our physicians to have a discussion with them. But if, you know, sometimes once you're on something that's working, it's hard to make a change, and we understand that. And so we're not trying to get in between the physician-patient relationship, but we certainly are going to make suggestions that if all things considered equal, if you're comfortable with this, you know, we're trying to save society and healthcare dollars.
And did you face any challenges from the payer side?
No, they're very happy with us. we have in other biosimilars, there have been some manufacturers that have done some contracting with payers where the payers tell us which biosimilar to use, which we're not very fond of. We'd rather make those decisions ourselves. Those are mostly in the supportive care arena. In the therapeutic arena, which is what we're talking about today, that they have not made any suggestions, and they are very happy that that we're saving them money.
What kinds of education did you offer your providers in terms of getting them comfortable and ready to use biosimilars?
Biosimilars have been in use in Europe for years, and so physicians know about it and have known about it. But we specifically, about a year ago, when we knew that, you know, the biosimilar kind of influx was going to come to our country, our chief medical officer has been, and she has weekly email blogs where she, you know, has an educational component. So she doesn't educate about biosimilars in every one of those weekly, but quite a few she addresses biosimilars. And then as these products came to market, we have had one live meeting and four webinars where we've had a medical science liaison from Angen educate about biosimilars in general, and their biosimilars in particular.
And how about patients? How are they responding to biosimilars, and are they starting to see some benefit in terms of their out-of-pocket costs?
They're absolutely seeing benefits in their out-of-pocket. Now we're mid-year, and so most patients have already, you know, met their again, these therapies are expensive, and so by mid-year, most patients have already met their max out-of-pocket. But as patients start new therapy, those patients have not yet always met their out-of-pocket, and so they're very appreciative. And, you know, we can compare and contrast the difference between the two agents. So they are very receptive. In general, patients, it comes down to the physician-patient relationship, and if there's a good relationship of trust, then they're going to trust the doctor is doing what's right for them. And so they've been very comfortable with either making the change or making the decision to use a biosimilar instead of a originator product. We all know, and when we talk to patients, this is not the perfect example, but it's somewhat analogous to a generic therapy where there was a brand and now there's a generic, and that's widely accepted by patients and has gone on for years. So it's analogous. And we do discuss that it's not perfectly analogous because biologics are much more difficult to manufacture than chemicals, which is what most drugs are. These are biologics. But to add comfort, we always emphasize that Amgen has been manufacturing biologics for decades. And so they definitely know what they're doing.
Do you have any lessons learned that you would like to share with other practices who are maybe considering moving to biosimilars, but maybe are daunted by making that change?
I think, you know, change is always hard. And so I think preparing, educating is really the key to change. The more information you have, the better. So make sure you're transparent. Make sure, you know, always like with any change, it's about the why. So if you explain the why, the how becomes a lot easier. For physicians, you always have to start with the science. Once you show the science is, you know, basically that these products are equivalent, and then you go to the why of we're trying to save dollars for society and for our patients. And so it's really about the why.
Well, Dr. Patton, thank you so much for joining us today. It's exciting to hear about the progress that you're making.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Not So Different. If you'd like to read more about One Oncology's adoption of biosimilars, or if you'd like to read more about Amgen's two newly launched biosimilars, visit our show notes. Remember, if you like the podcast, you can rate us at iTunes. Until next time, thanks for listening, and find us at centerforbiosimilars.com.